I'm Gab, he's Jules. It's the Gab and Jules Show. It's partly cloudy skies over West London, reflecting the vibe as we ease out of the International Week. I normally say we've got a packed show for you. We have a lot of stuff on the show.
Some of which
I think is very interesting. But we're going to start at the top with Mark Ogden and an issue which I think has kind of become really difficult to ignore, which is post-lockdown, we've seen more incidents of violence, very visible violence, usually around international games, most recently at England, the recent England game against Hungary. Augie, you were there. Tell us kind of what happened with this incident. And, you know, it wasn't widespread, but it was kind of shocking to see those pictures.
Yeah, it was isolated to the Hungarian section at Wembley, which housed about 1,000 visiting fans, Hungarian fans. And obviously, we have to kind of put into context the hangover, the residue from the game in Budapest a month ago, when the Hungarians were fined, ordered to close the ground again for racist abuse of the England players and objects thrown from the crowd. So that was the background to it. And as soon as the game started, that the Hungarian fans, I guess many were the so-called ultras wearing black T-shirts, went to attack stewards and police in the concourse. It was pretty lively. There's some pretty bad footage. You'll see it out there on social media, you know, of fans just punching stewards, punching police. It was pretty poorly controlled. And I think the one thing that we have to say is that Wembley has an issue at the moment with crowd control, as we know. I don't think they can be surprised by this, because we've seen this happen with Hungarian fans before. They're not hard to identify. They don't wear black T-shirts and walk around together. So, you know, again, it was another kind of failing of the Wembley security system, I think.
So a black T-shirt, like I might add, like the one you're wearing now.
Exactly.
Now, but I was just shocked by that video, which was widely circulated, which I think we've all seen, which I think according to police reports, it was after a steward, a person of color, was racially abused. Mm. So the police, I think very correctly, waded in to remove the people who were racially abusing him. And then somehow they were beaten back by the crowd. Now, I'm not an expert on policing, but I'm just going to talk about the optics of this. You see maybe 30 cops with their little yellow bibs. Essentially, they're going into the stands from the concourse, and then they just get driven right back into the tunnel. This is a terrible look, which gives you the sense that they're not in control.
I mean, it's 1,000 Hungary fans against 30 policemen.
It's not really 1,000 Hungary fans. It's not like
there were 1,000 there. No, but even if it's just 100 of them.
But it's... I was kind of surprised by this. Now, we know the backstory. I think we've all discussed the racism issue. But what strikes me as difference, and you know, this wasn't the only one. Obviously, there were major issues at the European Championship final, mm-hmm. which we've covered before. There was issues when Poland played Albania. It feels as if, other than France, which we're going to get to a little bit later, a lot of these incidents seem to focus around international football. Now, brief history lesson, since Augie and I are old. When we were growing up, there were proper hooligans. England had a terrible reputation when it came to fan fighting. We saw what happened. I'm talking about English league football. We saw what happened at Heysel and so on. And then we were all told that this has all gone away. And it seems to be circumscribed to the international game when it comes to England fans. I think you and I both agree on why those reasons are, but can you just tell us, Mark?
Yeah, look, I mean, there's all sorts of different reasons, and I think that, you know, off the field, in terms of away from football, as you've seen across Europe, there are, you know, political movements, nationalism's growing, and I think that the football team seems to be a kind of a lightning rod for that. It seems to attract maybe the wrong kind of people who want to promote a certain agenda. In terms of why it's not happening in the Premier League, I think the Premier League has become very, you know, sanitized. It's a family-orientated sport now, the Premier League, and
But this is precisely what I'm talking about. Why is it not like this at Premier League games? They play 380 Premier League games a year, and I have never seen anything like what I've seen with England at Wembley this time, and just 2 months ago in the Euro final. So I'm assuming it's the same police, it's the same fans, or is it? What is the problem?
Listen, if I knew what the problem was, and we'd have a solution, I don't think anyone does. But I do think that a lot of the... When you go to an England game, like, let's talk about England games. When you go to an England game, And I've been unfortunate enough to travel to England games and been at airports with England fans, and you know, the vast majority are fine, but there's a sizable minority who are obnoxious, who are not pleasant to be around. And you know, you don't see many England fans that carry flags of Arsenal, Man United, Liverpool. It tends to be supporters of clubs in the lower leagues, small towns, lower league clubs who, let's perhaps the fans don't get a chance to follow their team in Europe, so it's an opportunity for them that they don't normally get. Listen, we can't really generalise about why this and where they come from, but it does tend to attract fans from smaller towns, lower league clubs that don't have a Premier League club to follow. Now, what are the reasons for that? We don't know. People connect it to Brexit. There are so many issues here. For me, a lot of it's become attached to, you know, militarisation. You see flags with military regimental badges on, with poppies on. It's taken away from football. It's not about football anymore. It's almost like a badge of honour to support England. In many ways, it seems to be some England fans' opportunity to represent their country and their warped sense of view. I don't know. But it's just not the same. There's a different atmosphere with England games, international games, than the Premier League. You feel very safe going to a Premier League ground, never felt under threat whatsoever. You go to an England game and there's always an air of slight menace in the air sometimes, which is not great. I think that's why you see fewer families going to England games than you do a Premier League ground.
I think this is a key issue which many people don't live in England might not be aware of, how different an experience it is going to a Premier League game.
Yeah, certainly.
Or even actually, to be honest, a lower league game, whether it's a Championship or League One, haven't often gone below that. And going to watch England at Wembley is very different. We're going to get into that a bit more, and we're also going to talk about what's been happening in France this season, which seems kind of strident relative to the rest of Europe this year. We'll get into all that on the Gavin Jules podcast. Okay, I want to focus a little more on the policing and the experience. I think Wembley itself has something to do with it. Obviously, let's be very clear on this. This is not an issue with England fans on this occasion.
Definitely
this
not.
Was clearly an issue with those hungry supporters. To me, one of the big things was that when you've got people who feel that they have nothing to lose, right? And they did have nothing to lose in this case because they've got a 3-match ban for disorders and racist abuse and throwing of objects at the Euros.
Yeah.
2 games suspended. The third one, you know, is going to be applied down. Probably there'll be more coming.
Hopefully.
They have 2 games, one of them suspended, for what happened when England played there in the FIFA World Cup qualifiers. And again, you assume that that's going to be unsuspended. So Hungary aren't going to play at home in front of fans for a very long time.
But why are they even allowed to travel to away games?
Well,
why?
And you know now they won't be traveling to away games either.
I hope so, because everybody have been far too soft with that. I mean, it's not all the Hungary fans.
It's this minority that behaves this way. But
I can guarantee you that if we go back and look proper CCTV cameras and videos at the France game and the Euros, the England game last month, and the fans that you could identify who racially abused the black players in both France and England, who were doing the monkey chants, all of that, and you go back on the footage of Wembley on Tuesday night, I can guarantee you that it would not be surprising if they're the same guys. So why are they still there? Why are they still supporting the country? This is the problem I have with all of this.
To me, Mark, I think Jules makes a great point about this. I think it's also the willingness to go and ban people.
Exactly.
And take action. And it was funny.
You know what would hurt Hungary and the Hungarian FA? Get FIFA and UEFA to take some money off. The money that they get from FIFA and from UEFA, take some of that money off and say, unless you start sorting out your fans and those ultras and all of this has to stop, we're not going to give you all the money that we usually give to you as an FA for being part of FIFA and UEFA, because this is not acceptable. Yeah. That's the only thing that would work is that kind of stuff, unfortunately.
I mean, to buy these tickets, presumably they're vetted, they have to be identified.
Of course.
All it takes is you identify them before, like, oh, look, you know, I saw you misbehaving last time because I have CCTV cameras. This means you're not buying a ticket to the next Hungary Games.
Do what you do for clubs
with the
national team.
It's
this
the same is the thing, right? Clubs can do this. And if I can make just a quick digression before this, because I want to be fair to them. We brought up on the show when Koulibaly was racially abused after the Fiorentina game. Fiorentina says, and you know, we said, well, Mike Maignan had the same thing during his warm-up at Juventus. Yeah. Juventus said they would find the guy. Just to be clear on this, they did find the guy. So well done to Juventus.
Yeah.
They used their CCTV. They found the guy. They haven't named him. They've passed the details to police. There's a legal reason why they can't do that. They can't actually ban him until the police go through the thing and ban him. But, you know, he did commit a crime. So we're critical when clubs don't do enough. I think we need to praise them when they do enough. So well done to Juventus.
Did something similar to.
But, you know, what Juventus did is what I think largely, Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, is par for the course at Premier League grounds. You know, Juventus have this whole CCTV system and whatever. Most Premier League grounds have a very similar one. If you sit there at Old Trafford racially abusing somebody, it's not just the eyewitness accounts around of the stewards and the people around you, although that's very powerful. It's also the cameras and whatever else. So clearly you can do this in a club game. What I'm curious about, all those people who chase the stewards out of the stand, sorry, not the stewards, the cops out of the stand, and hit the cops and kick the cops, which we all saw. How many of those people do you think is the police going to take the time to go and identify and maybe charge and maybe put on an international watch list?
They've gone home. They've all gone home, right? They got up this morning easy.
Well, one thing to stress about that the vast majority of the Hungarian section on Tuesday was UK-based, apparently, because there was very, very few travel from Hungary. So the UK, London, has a very kind of a global community. So there was a suggestion that many of the Hungarian fans were actually based in the UK. So they may be identified, they may be charged, they may be punished. We don't know. But yes, I take your point that we haven't seen many instances of people at Euro 2020 being arrested, charged, imprisoned, whatever. There's not been a big array of people that have been shown to have been doing the wrong on that day. Now, we talk about Juventus identifying people, Premier League clubs identifying people. There's definitely a desire within the club game to get things done. The one thing I'd say about Hungary is, having been during the Euros, we know there were issues away from the grounds with the Euros in terms of the LGBT community, players that were told that they couldn't wear, you know, rainbow armbands or rainbow flags at grounds. So I wonder how much encouragement is being placed on the Hungarian authorities to catch these supporters, whether there is a desire in the country to actually dampen this down, or whether that is being encouraged in many ways because it kind of suits the people in charge. Now, in terms of what you do to punish them, maybe we should go further, ground closure. Maybe that if the persistent offenders now Hungary, maybe say, right, you are not allowed in the next qualifiers for the World Cup or the Euros. You miss a tournament. A two-year cycle, no games, no profile. The fans miss out on big games. The fans miss out on the chance to go to a World Cup. Punish them that way, because so that is the only way you're going to hit the people that actually matter.
So the reason that people, the authorities always give, and maybe they should revisit, I'm going to throw it out to you guys, is that if you start taking punishments that are that draconian, so not only are you punishing 95% of the fan base who doesn't do that, and you're punishing the players, but you're essentially giving the fans a way of essentially blackmailing their own FA or their own club, if it's a club. If you see what I'm saying, right? At this point, Hungary, those Hungarian fans can essentially go to the FA. We're going to misbehave and get you chucked out if you don't give us this, 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 and that. And that is the main reason why so far people have decided not to go and kick entire countries out because of fan behavior, except obviously in the most in the most egregious cases. Like, I to me, it's pretty simple. People fighting is bad for business, right? And I think ultimately that is why the Premier League, and like I'm not picking on England. Although I genuinely don't understand why the FA is so rubbish at this and why the police are so rubbish at this when it comes to England games and why they're so good at it. You know, I think among major leagues in Europe, I think England led the way. They're far ahead of where Italy were and still are, or indeed Spain. Or France, as we're going to see. So, you know, they need to be applauded for that. I just don't understand why they can't do it for internationals. Moving it back to the club game, I want to get a sense from you, Jules, because we've seen a lot of incidents. Obviously, there was the pitch invasion in the game between Nice and Marseille. Yeah. There was trouble when Lille played Lens.
Yeah.
There were some other incidents as well. Are people in France interrogating themselves about why? Yeah, why all of a sudden this?
Yeah, completely. There was also the Angers-Marseille where the Marseille fans at the end of the game, so he got onto the pitch to try to go and fight the Angers Ultras at the bottom of their stand. So many incidents. I think we counted 8 or 9 already. We had 8 match days. So it's almost 1 per week or 1 per weekend, which is far too many. They think that maybe because they've been away for the pandemic for so long and I don't know, kept a lot of frustration or a lot of, I don't know, something in them that they have to release when they go now back to the stadium, especially in big derbies. That's what we saw between Lille and Lens, of course, between Marseille and Nice. The animosity and the rivalry between those clubs is so big that if you consider fans not being allowed to be in the stadiums for the past 2 or 3 of those derbies, now they're back. There's a lot of tension. There's a lot of frustration maybe from the past. I don't know. I really cannot explain it, but they've been quite tough, not tough enough in my liking, but quite tough in the sanctions and the sanctioning. And we saw, for example, in the Nice Marseille fan, there was also a Nice fan who was, it looked like in one of the boxes, doing a Nazi salute, who got caught on CCTV camera, and the club has finally found him, and he's been sentenced to a suspended jail term and all of that, which is the right way of going, as we were saying earlier. But they have to do something really drastic to stop that, because, as you said, it's not good when Ligue 1 is this good, when you've got the Messi effect. This is not acceptable. This is making the league look so bad.
Augie, what I find remarkable in this context, too, is that one of the many reasons, in addition to better policing and stadium architecture and technology and higher prices that have all been in more families and kids and at grounds, that all these reasons have been given for the decline, the general decline, and I think there was a general decline in France as well until obviously these last few months, has been that maybe it's not like the people who like to fight have stopped enjoying fighting. They just decide it's not worth their while doing it at the stadium where there's cameras, where there's cops. And so we have seen trouble, and we still see trouble to some degree, at train stations, at bars, on the way to grounds.
Yeah, in the streets, yeah.
Sometimes Russians going into Nice with GoPros to go beat up random people.
Yeah.
To what degree does this still take by, again, you and I are older, so if we have to compare it, forget the 80s, but if we have to compare it to the 90s, does this stuff still happen away from grounds? Do people still plan a meeting up? Because my impression is that a lot of times these are actually older, more nostalgic people who go and do this, who go, they have a punch up, and then they go to the game later.
Well, first day of the season, Man United played Leeds at Old Trafford, and there was trouble in City Centre of Manchester. There were running battles between United fans and Leeds fans not far from the train station. Now, I don't think it is so much the older ones. I spoke to some at the FA maybe 18 months ago about the problem that they face, and they said that what they see now is that there's a younger wave of fans or hooligans, what to cause trouble, and it's based on the culture of, you know, fan violent films, you know, films that glamorise hooliganism. Younger fans want to get involved in that now, and it is a problem with the younger element, the mid-20s. There's a gap between them and maybe guy in the late 40s, early 50s that maybe remember the 80s and the 90s, but it's becoming a problem amongst young fans. And let's not forget, was it April, May, when a Premier League game between Man United and Liverpool was called off because fans invaded the stadium, caused chaos, and it was a lot of fans. It was a lot. They blockaded the Man United and Liverpool team bus in the hotels. So, yes.
Sorry, that was a protest of the Super League, so in the eyes of many people, that was good and justified, right?
Perhaps, but there was still an element of trouble and disorder. It wasn't, you know.
But it wasn't fans fighting fans, I'm saying. It was fans blockading any entrance to the stadium.
But it wasn't a peaceful protest in the sense that it wasn't something that was, you know, it wasn't people sitting down and being peaceful. Right. It was the same demographics, I would say, that have caused trouble before games. The Man United Leeds case is an example that it does happen away from grounds, and it still does, and it still will, because we have this same group of people that want to cause trouble.
And maybe at times there's no real explanation. Why did Burnley fans and Arsenal fans had a fight in the ground in that game? Burnley fans, I don't think, have had another fight with anyone else in a ground this season.
Yeah, I don't think neither did Arsenal fans.
No, neither did Arsenal fans. So why did, on that day, What did they have that scuffle? Maybe there's times where you can't really... I understand the rivalry, the Lille-Lens, right, the Marseille-Nice, right, and all that tension. And okay, but Burnley-Arsenal? So maybe there's times where there's no real explanation of why on that at that moment they wanted to have a fight, and then it lasted for, I don't know, 2 minutes. And then they went back, watched the game, and then it never happened again that so far this season. I don't know.
I think one thing that is worth explaining as well, that when you go to a football game, we tend not to see it because we're in the grounds at different times, but if you're an away fan going to a Premier League ground or even a Championship ground, your coach is basically escorted to the ground. If it's a high-profile fixture, fans do not have the ability to wander around and roam freely. If you went to a Man United Liverpool game, for instance, or Liverpool Man United, it is basically
that's a good point.
They're called bubble games, where the visiting fans are basically travelling in a bubble, surrounded by police, and they get off the coach, they're surrounded by police. It's a very well run operation now with the club game, which is a reason why I think that it might be worth getting some of the England games, the international games, away from Wembley again, because at the club grounds, they're used to dealing with these big crowds, big football crowds, every week. The Wembley stewarding operation, what, maybe 7-8 high-profile games a year, sometimes they're stewarding pop events. It's a different crowd. I think with your stewards at Old Trafford, at Anfield, at the Etihad, at the Emirates, they're used to dealing with football fans, football problems. And I think it'd be much better police. They have huge control rooms where they can see everything that goes on. They've got more CCTV at football grounds than in the shopping centre. So let's maybe take the games away from Wembley a bit and see if that helps the situation. Because if that was the case, if the Hungarian incident happened in the week at the Etihad or at St James's Park, I guarantee there would have been a much better operation in terms of identifying and closing it down.
Well, look, I don't want to be alarmist, and so I'm not going to. I don't think this is a trend. I think this is a one-off. I do buy the whole pent-up, post-lockdown, blah, blah, blah. I think we generally do a good job of policing, and it's safe to go to football matches, certainly safer than it was 10 years ago, let alone 30 years ago. But I also do want to make sure that people are held responsible, and I think the policing operation at Wembley really let people down very, very badly, and I hope they look into that. Equally in France, as you said, it's the messy season.
Yeah.
Let's move on, and let's make sure that this stuff is the anomaly and doesn't go back to being close to the norm. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough violence, enough Augie, enough smoldering depression. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
There's so much focus on Newcastle after the Saudi takeover. Jules, are we to take it for granted that Steve Bruce is going to be let go, as everybody seems to be reporting?
Yes.
And if so, do you have some sympathy?
Yes, we are. The only sympathy I have, I don't think he's a good manager. And I certainly don't think that matches the ambition that the new ownership have for this club. So why would you keep someone who is second from bottom when you have high ambitions? It makes no sense.
Well, but they're playing in a couple of days and he's still there.
But that it doesn't matter. I think the sooner you get rid of him and the sooner you can move on and get someone else, new, the better. Where the only sympathy I have, a little bit, is that he's on 999 games as a manager, in his managerial career. And the one against Spurs on Sunday would be the 1,000th, which is a huge milestone. And, he deserves a lot of credit for that longevity and that kind of experience. And if you sack him like this week, And he does. He's not on the bench for the Spurs game. He will have another go at some point because he will have another job, you know, sooner rather than later. You know how the merry-go-round works with managers in England, but that's the only thing. Otherwise, I don't see where I don't have a problem at all, and I'm surprised they haven't even done it quicker.
I just find it odd that everybody said, like, oh, it's going to happen. His number two, Graham Jones or whatever.
So why would you keep him? Why would you keep
Bruce? But it hasn't happened yet.
No, I know. And there's probably a reason for that.
Money.
Maybe money. And meanwhile, Gab, the bookies are busy predicting who will come next after Bruce is sacked, with Frank Lampard, Antonio Conte, Lucien Favre, Brendan Rodgers, Roberto Martinez, Steven Gerrard, Eddie Howe, Ralf Rangnick, Zinedine Zidane, my dad. Yeah, like, you know, all linked. It's a very diverse bunch, isn't it?
Yeah, what that tells me is that every agent in the world is on the phone to Amanda to see what happens. Obviously, some of these guys are unemployed, like Lampard, like Conte, like Eddie Howe.
Like Zidane. I mean, imagine Zidane and Newcastle.
That would be, it'd be amazing. Look, he's got a history in black and white, right?
Yeah,
so the Brendan Rodgers one, some people are reporting he's going to turn them down. Guys, if you're Brendan Rodgers, with all due respect to Newcastle, if, as we've been told, they're going to grow gradually, why would you leave Leicester now to go to Newcastle where, you know, it's going to take time? It just makes zero sense to me.
No, yeah,
whatsoever.
Although the money would be, you know, he's going to triple.
I think Brendan has enough money.
Yeah, no, of course he has. But maybe he likes the project of building a super team.
He's doing that in Leicester.
The next 5 years, yeah, true.
There's a similar merry-go-round of names for the sporting director job. Luis Campos always seems to come up. Jules, the former Lille and Monaco man, is he as brilliant as some say he is? Or is he as, and obviously our lawyers are watching, as controversial as others say he is?
Well, just before we go into Campos, I think the thing that is really important, if you're the new owners at Newcastle, is to name your sporting director. And maybe that's why...
Do that Bruce, first and then
do
get...
Do that first. Your, and then
change Bruce if you want to change Bruce.
Yeah, and then with the sporting director, go and get a manager that is on the same page as the sporting director. What's the point of appointing a new manager now and then you go and get a sporting director and they don't have the same idea, they don't have the same vision or anything?
Unless you hire Rangnick, in which case he's the same man and he does everything.
He does everything. Yeah, you're right. Maybe. In terms of Campos... The only issue I've got with this is that Campos is amazing at finding those gems, right? So you go to Rio Ave and you find Fabinho. You go to Benfica B team and you find Bernardo Silva. You know, those kind of stuff. Same with Lille in many respects. Newcastle don't want someone from the Benfica B team, right? They want, you would think, they want some big name players, as big as you can for now. I'm not, you're second from bottom. It's not a Benfica B 19-year-old talent that is going to help you come out of there, I think, and make that team improve. So I'm just not sure if Campos is the right profile. He's got other contacts and he can go and sign you Coutinho or sign you whoever, Aaron Ramsey or whoever you want. But what he's really good at is that. Or maybe he can do a bit of both. I think Campos is a great guy, even if there is a bit of controversy, as you said. It's his own company that he works through. There's a few stories there and there.
Right.
Let's put it that way. Some predict Newcastle will attempt to copy PSG and Manchester City and spend huge amount of money straight away, Gab, as early as January and then next summer. Others said that it would be more gradual. And some have pointed out that Newcastle new owners are 10 times richer than Sheikh Mansour City, for example. But Gab, does that matter?
No, this is one of the stupidest things that you can say. It's just so dumb. And I've seen this everywhere. Like, oh, look, they're 10 times as rich.
Hey, they're not going to spend $400 billion on this club anyway.
So, first of all, the public investment fund of Saudi Arabia has a lot of assets under control. Yes, they have a lot of money, right? But they're not an individual. Doesn't mean they're going to spend all that money on a football club. They are actually a serious fund that tries to get a return
for
the people of Saudi Arabia. They're running a business. I think the entire environment's completely different to when Abu Dhabi took over at Manchester City and Qatar at Paris Saint-Germain. Completely. Financial fair play, the landscape, things are very different. On top of that, there's what, I don't know how much stock we should put on what Amanda Staveley says, but she says it's going to be gradual growth as well. So how rich the owner It doesn't make a jot of difference. Mm. It's what is the plan? They say it's going to be more gradual. I think it makes sense for it to be more gradual and try to do things overnight, because there is a huge gap between where they are now, and there's a lot of competition for those top four spots. So, no, I think it's going to be gradual. I believe them. Mauricio Pochettino talked about Kylian Mbappe's future, saying the club will try to persuade him to stay. Jules, is this news, or is Pochettino just putting his Captain Obvious hat on?
Captain Obvious, he says it all the time. I mean, I guess every time we ask him the question, he has to say,
It's our fault.
I know, it's our fault, yes. We want him to stay. We're hoping that we can convince him to stay, persuade him to stay. He uses different words, convince, persuade, believe, all of that. So time will tell, that's all. Bad news for Milan. My boy Mac Maignan has undergone surgery for his wrist injury, while my other boy Theo Hernandez tested positive for COVID after coming back from France and the international break. This is a big blow, especially in terms of Champions League. They played Porto next week.
It's a huge blow, and obviously they're in a tough position after the defeats to Liverpool and then that car crash against Atletico Madrid, where they were really unlucky. They've got 8 guys out this weekend. They'll hope to get some people back. Obviously, Zlatan also out. It's a really tough spot to be in for a team that's played, I think, above themselves so far. Manchester United have confirmed that Rafael Varane suffered a groin injury and will be out, quote, for a few weeks. Jules, given that Harry Maguire is also sidelined as they travel to face Leicester this weekend, the prospect of an old school Lindelof-Bailly partnership looms. See, I didn't put Phil Jones in that sentence?
Yeah, because he would be on the bench, and you hope that nothing happens to Lindelof or Bailly, otherwise it's the return of the Phil.
No, come on, they have Taden Mengi or whatever his name is, right?
They have youngsters, I guess, that they can rely on. Let's not forget that you could have Lindelof and Bailly and still no real holding midfielder ahead in front of them, which is also a problem, I think, because you don't protect them. This could be bad against Leicester.
And Stop being negative about United. Get behind the Champions League.
Let's just keep the ball higher up, press high, so at least Lindelof and Bailly never see the ball.
At least there's no Champions League game in midweek. Oh, wait.
Oh. Right. The Times report that Phil Foden is going to sign a bumper new deal at Manchester City through 2027, a 6-year deal. Gav, I know you don't like long contracts, of course, although he's 12, so that's fine, I guess. But this one is a no-brainer.
It is a complete no-brainer. He's a phenomenal footballer. He's 21 years old. Obviously, you lock him up. Well, I love the optics of it. They're like, it's a 6-year deal. Well, no, because his current deal extends in 2024.
Yeah.
So you're adding 3 years to the end of the deal. But more importantly, you're giving him a lot more money.
Yeah.
And I think it's money that he deserves because he's
a regular,
an important player.
Definitely.
Germany and Denmark clinched automatic spots at the 2022 World Cup in Qatar, joining Qatar, obviously, who qualifies hosts. No surprise there, right?
No, I mean, Denmark was so impressive, won all their games, didn't concede a single goal, I think. And for Germany, it started badly with Jogi Löw because they lost against North Macedonia. And Hansi Flick. Just put everything right again, as we expected. And they threw, and they look good as well. We were all full of praise for Spain's performance in the Nations League Final Four, and rightly so. And we talked about how bright the future is. But Gab, in terms of qualifying for the World Cup, in terms of all the big boys in Europe, they probably face the stiffest challenge because Sweden are ahead of them with just 2 games to go.
Sweden are ahead of them. It's Sweden 15, Spain 13, Greece 9. Now, Greece hosts Spain. Remember, Greece got a point off of Spain last time. And then the last one is Spain against Sweden. And Sweden may have already qualified or whatever. But still, maybe Zlatan will play in that game.
Yes.
Who knows? Like, there are things that can go wrong. You don't want to mess with it. And obviously, number one qualifies. Number two, of course, goes to the playoffs. According to Spain, has sentenced Lucas Hernandez to 6 months in prison. He's obviously not going to go to prison, you think?
But tell us more.
This could be complicated. What is the
fallout? Yeah, it's a bit strange. So go back to 2017. Lucas and his girlfriend Amelia, then his girlfriend, had a fight. They were sentenced for the fight.
Both of them separately.
Yeah, separately. Suspended jail stuff, a fine, and also the fact that they could not be close
to each
other.
A restraining order where he wasn't allowed to go near her.
Yeah, where he can't be near her. The thing is, then they made up. They got married in Vegas 2 months later, went for their honeymoon in Miami, and on their way back from Miami, got stopped at the airport saying, hey, how can you holding hands here? You should not be close to each other.
So he got charged again for violating the restraining order.
And now, since all that time, court in Spain and the judge is saying, hang on, do you remember what happened all those years ago? Now you have to come and do that jail sentence. You need to pick the jail where you're going to go to. So he will have to be in Madrid on the 19th, so next week, to be present at the court. Not that he will see a judge or anything. He will take, I think, some paper. Then we'll have to fill a form saying where he wants to go, in what jail in Spain he wants to go for the 6 months.
He's not actually going to go to prison.
They don't think he's going to go. Maybe a few days, but that's it.
I'd love to know who his agent, who his lawyer is, and why they didn't tell them.
That's a mess, though.
Listen, sort the paperwork out. This is ridiculous.
Such a mess. FIFA president Gianni Infantino has talked about his dream of seeing a joint Israel-Palestine bid for the World Cup in the future, Gab. Is he deluded completely, or the intention is good?
I'm in two minds about this, right? So let me put my cynical hat on and tell you, oh, look, he wants to win the Nobel Peace Prize. He wants to tell people what they want to hear, blah, blah, blah. He's not serious. It can never happen.
It's not realistic.
Because it's not realistic. Okay, fine. At the same time, are we so cynical to say, oh, look, they can never, ever make peace? Why not? You know, at some point, I think this is all he's going to say. Like, we want to go and bash him over the head, over his big bald head for the 10 millionth time. Fine. But I like the idea. I actually would love it if one day there could be peace and these guys could get along.
Yeah,
and
why
not?
Course,
host the World Cup. So I'm not going to go and bash him the way many people have. How about some good news for Barcelona for a change?
Sergio Aguero. Is the Dutch guy still there?
Stop it. Sergio Aguero is back, and he even scored in a friendly.
He did. Coutinho scored the other goal. They won 2-0 with a decent team because... You know, guys like Piqué, Longley, Umtiti, Sergio Roberto, I think, played as well.
Oh, he's fit again, yeah.
It was a Ricky Puch. So it was a decent team for all the players who were not on international duty. They won, and I think that maybe he can have 15, 20 minutes at the weekend against Valencia.
And then start in the Clásico ahead of Luke de Jong.
Can you imagine?
Oh.
And then get injured again, because that, you know, that's what he's been doing. Meanwhile, Pedri is reportedly close to finally extending his contract at the Camp Nou with a release clause of 600 million, or is he a billion, or like crazy amount anyway?
Listen, the only thing that matters here is that he's close to extending his contract.
Yeah.
Now, bear in mind, for the last 18 months, we've heard that he's close to extending his contract. He's still on a youth contract. They have an option, blah, blah, blah. It's woefully underpaid. It's in his interest to get it done. That is the good news. Release clauses are, frankly, completely irrelevant because in Spain, it's complicated, slightly antiquated system, but they're set so high that nobody's going to pay 600 million euros.
There's more and more players now who don't have them anymore. In Spain.
Thankfully, they're joining the 21st century. We focus on events in the stands at Wembley, but there was a football match with two in England were held by Hungary 1-1. Jules, Harry Kane had a rough time, and he also has yet to score for Spurs in the Premier League this season, though he did get a hot hat-trick in the Europa Conference League against a team I genuinely had never heard of before. Is there a reason for Kane to be concerned?
I think so. There has to be, because he doesn't look himself, clearly, because with Spurs, there's always the question mark of he doesn't really want to be there. It's different with England, but it was not a good performance from England overall, and I think that doesn't help him. But yeah, I think I'm a bit worried. Spurs chairman Daniel Levy has angered the club supporters' trust by refusing to meet with them. So they released their list of questions about the club. Gab, I know you're a big fan of supporter representation, participation.
I don't think it's just a business.
Why did he say no to them?
I don't know. They had these questions like, what is your vision for the club? What is this and that? Just be a man, answer them. No, you don't have to, strictly speaking. It's your club. It's Joe Lewis's club, actually.
Yeah.
But just it just makes for better relations if you can go and provide some answers. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Gab. Just go to Indeed.com/Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Nice to see some cooperation among Premier League clubs. Manchester City, Manchester United, Liverpool, and Chelsea have all chipped in to fly a charter jet with nine players back from Manaus back to England immediately after the Brazil-Uruguay qualifier on Thursday night. This is common sense. Other clubs have been doing this for ages.
It is. It's good for the environment because it's only one flight instead of four different flights from South America back to London. I'm only joking. It's good because, as we've explained before, and we can't go back, so South America and CONMEBOL played really late. They had three games, so the players are going to come really late, and I think a few of them might not be involved at all at the weekend. But at least you're gaining some precious time by bringing them back as soon as you can, like this, by all sharing. And they're all friends, let's be honest. You know, it's not like if United players and Liverpool players on that plane, we're not going to talk about each other and going to fight on the private jet, you know? So.
I'm assuming Richarlison is in. I should know this, but I'm assuming Richarlison is in the squad.
He is indeed. He's called even assisted by Rafinha.
Is he not allowed to hit?
No, I think he is. He would be. You just didn't put Everton because you don't like them.
I'd love to know how they split up the costs here. And also, is it an Etihad plane?
That's a good question. Is it, if you have two players, do you pay more or less than if you just have one?
Exactly.
If he doesn't eat on boards. Does that count?
Also, what kind of a plane is it? Because it's a long distance. So I'm assuming it would need to be a big plane, right?
No. They're private jets can do the South America, Europe flight with no problem.
Well, yeah, but it still needs to be a larger. It's not going to be a little Cessna.
But usually the ones they take is 4 or 5 seaters. This one would be obviously easily a 10-seater.
I don't think a 4 or 5 seater can fly nonstop to... Well, look, aviation, private plane experts.
Definitely.
Please tell us.
I've taken some before. Gab clearly hasn't.
Yes, you've taken four. Yeah, you've taken four-seater planes to South to freaking Manaus in the middle of the Amazon, whatever.
Pep Guardiola has asked for a rule change to allow 5 substitutions in the League Cup games. And according to English media reports, his wish is about to be granted. Gab, your thought? What happens if they get knocked out in the next round? It still stays?
Look, you know my thoughts on this. This is stupid. This is a waste of time. I think you should be allowed 11 substitutes. That you should be allowed not to play this at all. That said, I kind of have a problem with changing the rules of the competition.
You can't do it.
Like, it started. The competition.
It has started. You had a round already. You can't change it. It's crazy.
I don't know who runs the League Cup. I'm assuming it's the Football League, which is one of the worst run. Certainly, I would argue the Football League is far worse run than the Premier League, right? For many reasons. It has been done over the years.
I know there's some improvement. Rick Parry is not going to be happy, though.
Sorry?
Rick Parry, your friend, is not going to be happy hear this.
Rick Parry, I do know him. I do like him.
He's the EFL chairman.
But he's only come in a couple of years ago, right? He inherited the mess from the nonsense before, going out of business and no regulation. And it's a difficult job. But the competition started. You can't just change the rules, you know.
I think so. I know you were quite excited about it. I'm like, okay.
Let's, I suggest you want to make the Football League, the League Cup more interesting.
Scrappy.
No, have a two-pointer. You shoot from outside the box, it's worth two goals rather than one.
Stop it.
Benjamin Mundy has been denied bail for the third time. Jules, he's been in custody now for 7 weeks.
7 weeks, yeah. Third time he asked for bail. That was not granted by the judge in Chester Court, which means that his next audition now is November the 15th, where we'll have to plead guilty or not guilty. It's likely that he will plead not guilty. And then the trial is set for January 24th, and that could last 3 weeks. And I don't know, but if you're not granted bail again, it's because this is pretty, pretty, pretty bad. So,
I'm not a lawyer. I'm assuming
this is the way it's taken.
They weigh up whether you're a flight risk.
Exactly.
Weigh up whether you're likely to reoffend.
But considering that he already broke the bail that he was on before by organizing a party in August and more raping charges as well, of course they're not going to grant him bail now. It's crazy.
Jesse Lingard. Oh, sorry, that's your
mine.
Question.
Yeah, Jesse Lingard. I can't wait to hear your answer on Jesse Lingard. Jesse Lingard, who is out of contract, as we all know, at the end of the season, and has been linked with moves to, wait for it, Barcelona and AC Milan.
Yeah, so...
Wow. I mean, I'm sure Barcelona could do with Jesse Lingard right now.
Only joking. Look, I mean...
Please.
Oh, come on. Pedri's clearly not good enough to play for Barcelona.
Please.
You can put Lingard in his... No.
Please.
So look, I think this is 100% agent intermediary talk. Look, we noticed that Barcelona has signed all these famous players on expiring contracts, like Aguero and whatnot. And we noticed that Milan has signed former Premier League players like Tomori and Giroud. Perfect. And that nice Mr. Gazzetta speaks English too.
Yep,
so let's get on the phone to him, right? I think he would be a poor fit for our team. Not because Lingard's a bad player.
No.
But because of where these clubs are now. He's on good money in Manchester United. I think Barcelona already have guys who can play his position and are probably better than he is. You don't need at Lingard's age. I wish him well. I was glad he did well at West Ham.
Yeah.
If he moves on, I think he can make a lot of clubs better. But I think if he wants to go abroad for the experience, whatever. But I think you're better off. You could have an impact at another top six club.
You know, this got Newcastle written all over it, right? For Jesse Lingard.
I knew you were going.
Jellings!
Shout out to Bournemouth and Wales midfielder David Brooks, one of the good guys. He's been diagnosed with cancer. Jules, he's determined to come back.
Yeah, he is. He was very positive, I felt, in his statement. I guess you have to be. I think it's lymphoma.
Yep.
And Bournemouth will support him. Of course, it's a great club, really good. And such a sad, he's 24 years old, such a great player, such a sad news. And let's hope that he comes out fighting and that the treatment works and that sooner he can be back on the pitch playing.
And it raises awareness as well.
Yeah, of course.
The reality of this illness.
Real Madrid continue to be linked with Antonio Rudiger, another player who becomes a free agent in the summer, in June, if he doesn't extend his contract with Chelsea. Gabby turns 29 in March. How hard should Chelsea try to persuade him to stay?
I find this really, really interesting. So normally, I wouldn't begrudge. He could easily turn around and say, look, I want a league title at Chelsea. I want a Champions League at Chelsea. I want Real Madrid. You know, let me go.
Yeah.
Equally, he's settled. He's a big part of Tuchel's plans. I think Chelsea will bring in another defender. Obviously, we're linked to Jules Koundé, whether it's him or somebody else. But he can look around. He can still play a really important part Chelsea for several years. As opposed to moving to Real Madrid where, you know,
you've got somewhere else. I think there would be plenty of other clubs.
Yeah, but would you want to move? I mean, I don't...
Bayern Munich, Zule is out of contract, Zule goes. Bayern Munich say, hey, Tony, do you want to come back home?
Yeah, he's not home. He's a Stuttgart guy.
I know, he's a Stuttgart, but Germany is still home.
I don't know. It'd be pretty disappointing if he left London for Munich.
How much do you think, what's the difference between what Chelsea will offer him to renew and what he could get at a Bayern Munich or a Real Madrid?
So first of all, I don't see Bayern Munich.
Okay, let's say Real Madrid. If he gets the same contract,
I don't think Bayern Munich would pay him more than what he would get at Chelsea.
If he gets the Alaba contract at Real Madrid,
if he does, yeah, fine. But
the difference is pretty big between whatever Chelsea will offer him, the signing on fee and the wages at Real Madrid.
Maybe
if
I'm biased because I really like Rudiger.
I love him too.
I don't think. When you're 29, I think I don't know him well enough to say this for a fact, but I would like to think that at this stage of his career, he's going to make a decision not based on money, because he's going to get a lot whether he stays or goes.
I was just wondering.
But based on the project of where he wants to go. From Real Madrid's perspective, I'd be slightly careful with this because you have Militao, obviously. You have Alaba.
Yeah.
Alaba is only going to be a central defender, I think, going forward. Do you necessarily need a third center back on really big money? So that's why I'm a bit skeptical about that.
Yeah. I see your point.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain has 2 years remaining on his deal with Liverpool, and as things stand, it doesn't appear he'll get a new one. Jules, he's been linked with a return to Arsenal. Would that make sense for Arsenal?
I'm not sure. I can understand his frustration of not playing more, and it's highly competition in this Liverpool squad, of course, and I'm not sure what can change now for him to play more and to be ahead of Curtis Jones, for example, in the rotation in midfield. So I'm a bit worried for his game time. So leave and go somewhere in January for Arsenal.
Not Arsenal.
No, I don't think those returns are any good. I'm not sure that's what they need right now either.
What position does he play? I mean, is he now a central midfielder? Is he a wide midfielder?
I think he still have that versatility and can play in different positions, which might be useful for certain clubs.
Right. But at Arsenal, he's not going to play defensive midfield. He's not going to give you extra cover there, which is where I think Arsenal could use another body.
Yeah.
As an attacking midfielder, you've got Smith Rowe, you've got Odegaard. As a winger, you've got Saka, you've got Pepe, and so on.
No, I don't think there's room for him.
I mean, yeah, wouldn't make sense.
I don't think so either. The United States national team conceded a goal straight away after less than a minute against Costa Rica at home on Wednesday night before turning things around for a 2-1 win, very important after their loss to Panama at the weekend. After my boy Keylor Navas got injured, Gab, I guess it's a good thing for PSG that they've got a decent backup goalkeeper called...
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't quite remember his name, but I do know his agent is. Look, you want Keylor Navas to come back and be fit regardless of the Paris Saint-Germain thing. I actually watched extended highlights of this game. I didn't watch the whole game because it was in the middle of the night, but I did watch extended highlights. U.S. moved the ball really, really nicely in midfield. They had, like, you know, McKennie and Adams. And
I
thought they looked good. Much
better than against Panama, because that was bad.
A lot better. Things looking up a little bit for the U.S. and Greg Berhalter. Our colleague and VAR specialist, Dale Johnson, has published the VAR effect table. This is a regular project. You're going to be doing this several times throughout the season, I believe four or five times. It looks at what the Premier League table would look like if there was no VAR, which I put out to all the Luddites who hate VAR. We're better off without it. Now, it's early in the season, so obviously there isn't going to be big variation, but Chelsea would be further clear at the top because obviously Reece James would have never been sent off against Liverpool. Everton would be second, good for Rafa, while Newcastle would be out of the relegation zone and in mid-table. Do you think stuff like this persuades the VAR haters?
I don't really know. I love Dale Johnson, our colleague, of course, and he's so good on all this refereeing and decisions and explaining them well and VAR, all of that. Not really sure what good comes out of this table, because we're not going to go back to no VAR. So by doing this, you say, oh, look, I hate VAR, and I tell you this makes it wrong because I'm a Newcastle fan and I should be mid-table and not second from bottom. I'm not sure what we're trying to gain by showing what life would be. And also, by the way, if it's the wrong decision that VAR got, okay, and it should not have been a red card or it should have been a goal, how do you know then that the game ends up the way he did at that time as well? So every result would be false.
No, what he does is he uses statistical modeling to run a simulation to come out with a predicted outcome for the game if the decision wasn't overturned. I know it's still predictions, but I think it is interesting because if you see that in a non-VAR world, your team would get relegated, even if you're the biggest, like, oh, I hate VAR, oh, the spirit of the game, the spontaneous celebration of the goal, all that crap that people threw out there. You might feel a little bit differently because there's a lot
of stuff. If you're a Newcastle fan right now, you should be 12th instead of 19th. You're not happy with VAR, right?
Yeah. But these are correct VAR decisions, presumably, right?
Well, so, but
you know, it's a good point.
So I don't know. I see your point about it's interesting. Yeah. I don't know, man. Gab, you can never have enough of VAR talk, of course. So the Bundesliga published results that indicate that just one out of the 28 VAR interventions and decisions this season so far was incorrect. So German, isn't it? Saying, yeah, look, we're doing better than anyone else. Only one out of 28 was wrong.
So this is all apples and oranges unless other leagues do the same thing, applying the same standards and whatever else. And that obviously hasn't happened. This is basically the Bundesliga grading itself on its use of VAR. That. I'm pro VAR, but you know what? One out of 28 sounds reasonable.
Like, it is reasonable.
Unless you have a bad referee, and unfortunately, or a bad VAR, VAR generally corrects mistakes. It's what it's there to do. So I have no issue with this. And if you have a philosophical opposition to VAR, fine. And
what do you think it is in the Premier League? 14 out of 28 were wrong. Sorry, we apologize. They've already apologized a few times for wrong calls.
I genuinely think this is a debate for a different time, but it is remarkable, right? Part of what makes the Premier League so good is that they go around the world, they get the best players from around the world, the best coaches, the best owners, the best executives, the best physios, the best doctors, the best journalists.
Of course. Right?
oh, referees, only English ones. Sorry. I mean, I don't, it blows my mind.
I know.
And so on top of that, when you get a generation, you know, not everybody, I don't think every Premier League referee is bad. There are some very good ones. But you generally get a generation of referees that are not good. And you can't fix that. This is a talent. You know, we can go and complain about PGMOL and our friend Mike Riley all we want. Mike Riley can't snap his fingers and make referees better, right? Yeah. So you wonder about that. You know, ask yourself, how much worse would the Premier League be if all the owners, all the coaches, all the players had to be English? No Scots, no Welsh, let alone people from other countries, right?
Yeah.
I think we agree that it would be a worse product.
Yeah.
And yet this is exactly what you have with referees, right? You have such a small pool of people, and you get unlucky, and there's a couple that aren't that good or too young or aren't that good yet, and then that affects where you are. Yeah. Sorry, it's a digression.
No, but it's a good point.
It is amazing how, you know, they're so open to the rest of the world in everything, yeah, except for this one thing. The New York Times are reporting that the long-standing partnership between EA Sports and FIFA could be coming to an end. The iconic game known to many simply as FIFA. I think there's people who play it who don't even know what
FIFA is.
There's another FIFA. Some people suggest it could be called FC. They've trademarked the game just in case they don't reach an agreement.
This is interesting, isn't it?
Would it make you a bit sad?
It would make you a bit sad. I think for our generation, certainly, this has been a big part, whether you're a big video game fan or not, but certainly it's an iconic game. I still think that they will find an agreement, even if FIFA want more money from EA Sports. I think for EA Sports, it's so important that it remains a FIFA game and not just the FC 2022, 2023, or that kind of stuff. So we've seen those arguments before, and usually they find a way financially, but yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Claudio Ranieri turns 70 next week, but the new Watford boss says it's not a problem, and he's convinced that he can manage until he's 80. Gab, that's a bit over the top, right?
Okay, having
80 is old.
Having known Claudio Ranieri for 20 years, I can tell you that sometimes he just says things just for the hell of it, like the whole dilly ding dilly dong.
Yeah, of course.
Pizza, whatever. He's having fun. He's going to keep going. This is his, like, I think it's his 23rd job in football. Like,
crazy.
The guy does it because he loves it. He's got more than enough money.
But you saw his energy in his press conference on Wednesday. He was so full of energy, smiling. Yeah. I think he's great.
Yeah, I think it'll last a while longer.
Yeah.
Right, that brings us to an end this week. But I reckon we should be back on Monday.
Because
there's some pretty big games coming up. Until then, love the game, love yourself, love your neighbor.